and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fantastic guest who's Canadian, and we always like Canadians on our show. It makes me happy. Her web series, Dirty Love, is currently available on YouTube. 8 episodes available. They're all there. Go watch them right now. Listen to the interview. Go watch the episodes. Come back. Listen to the interview again. Might as well catch you up on what you missed. Mesa Hui? Hui?
Hurry
is in the house. Welcome to the show.
You got to roll your R's.
Yeah. As born Canadians, I don't have problems, you know. Too English, I guess. So, why a web series? Let's start there.
So I started out as an actor. I've always been an actor my whole life. And I studied film in school in Montreal. And that's kind of when I really got behind the camera. And I still did theater. And then, you know, when I moved back to Ottawa, I started acting. And I found it really hard to book jobs. So I wanted to create. I wanted to act. I wanted, you know, my actor friends to be acting. And so I decided to create something, and something that I could relate to, because I'm an Arab-Canadian actor, and a lot of the auditions I was going to were for Arab characters were, you know, an oppressed, covered Muslim, or someone with an accent, or a terrorist, or a refugee. And I'm like, that's not who I am. That's not what I relate to. I'm a first-generation Arab-Canadian. I'm born in Canada. My parents came here as immigrants in the 70s. And, you know, I relate to more, I guess, what other, you know, European or Mediterranean families, first generation, would be like. You go home to your family that's very into their culture, like maybe my Arabic food, you know, Arabic music, Arabic TV, all that stuff. Dealing with your parents, and you go out, you know, hang out with your friends, and they're from different cultures, and you're kind of in between, and you know. So what I was going for in terms of auditions for Arabs was not what I wanted to represent for my culture, because that's not realistic. And so I wanted to create something that I could relate to, and that's something I wanted to act. So I wanted to put it out there.
So I got a question there. Well, I mean, you live in Canada. It's very multicultural in Canada. So you think this stigma for Arab Canadians still exists? Like, you can't get a role, like, saying as a girlfriend or as a wife?
Oh, I can tell you that for Arab characters, when they're created, it's not like that at all. Like the ones that I've auditioned for, anything that I've gotten, it's terrorists, wife of a terrorist, sister of a terrorist, or refugee. And there are, like, refugee love stories, but still a refugee. So not just, like, the casual, like, girlfriend or the wife. You know, there's none of that.
So let's get into this. You didn't even just do a web series. You did an adult web series.
Yes.
So I want to.
So I created it based on. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. It's all right. I'll get there. Go.
Okay. Sorry. So I created it based on real experiences.
Now you said that. Now I'm going to hint around things, and because I don't want to ruin the series for you. Now the one thing I want to get at, you're on a lunch date with your roommate, and you're discussing a waiter. Did that really happen? Because that really felt very real to me, that whole conversation and discussing.
It's happened before, but not with him, but it's happened before, yes.
Okay. So did that help you write your thing then, like basing your real experience? Like, did you sell sex toys then? There's a real question then.
So, no. So I was going to. When I moved back from Montreal, I was broke and I didn't have a job. I was like, okay. So then I was looking into doing selling sex toys. Actually, I went to a passion party. I was like, this is amazing. But, you know, and with those multi-level marketing business, you have to buy everything. And I was like, I don't have $500 to buy these toys to sell them. So that's what kind of stopped me in the end. But I was definitely interested in doing that, and that's where it came from.
Okay, so you got your web series. Why only 8 episodes? Like, not 12? Or you just, I haven't seen them all yet.
No, it's 8. I funded everything out of pocket. It's really hard to get funding, especially in Canada, for anything. So I funded everything out of pocket. You know, I got everybody to volunteer. So I basically, I paid for equipment, I paid for food, and that was it, and some studio space. So I did everything out of pocket. So that's the only reason why it was 8 episodes.
Okay, I want to back this up to the studio space. What is filmed in studio? The apartment? is the only thing I could guess, but it looked like a real apartment.
No, and one of the spanking workshop. That's a studio. Like, that's a kink studio that I rented.
Okay, I know the one you're talking about. You have one scene there. Because I'm like, and I also want to go to the scene when you have your parents' house. Use that twice, I would argue, in the series. And are those your
real parents? Sorry, you cut out there.
Sorry, are those your real parents? And you use their location twice?
Yes, those are my parents.
Now, how do they feel about this? Now, I mean, I don't know enough about it. I mean, you really bring a box of sex toys to meet your family.
Yeah. So when I was writing it, it took about, quite a few months when I was writing it. And I kept kind of, like, prepping them. So this is what I'm writing. And I want to put you in it. You know, I want to make sure you're involved. And they're like, okay. And I kind of buttered them up a little bit. And my mom saw how serious I was about it. So she knew it wasn't just like fluff or whatever. She knew I was serious. And so that's why they took it seriously. But I did. So my mom was quite embarrassed when we were filming, though, like looking at the toys. And so she was really shy, but she was proud of me, like, for accomplishing this. So she kind of put that aside, and she's like, I can't share your stuff with my family in Lebanon. They can't see that, but I'll share it with my coworkers. They'll watch it. My dad was the same. He's like, oh, I shared it with all my friends, but all my white friends, not the Arabs. We can't show them.
So what is it about Arab culture that they can't relate to this?
Their generation can't relate to this, really. Cause I mean, it's very taboo for a woman to be sexualized. You know, especially, you know, where your daughter being sexualized, and, you know, you're supposed to be married when you have sex. Like, that's in their mind, that's their culture. That's always been their culture, is that, you know, a woman only has sex when she's married, and that is it. So it's very, progressive. And, you know, and I had met some producers at TIFF this year, and they're Egyptian, they live in Toronto, but they work with a lot of people in Egypt, and they watch the series. And he said, I really think it's awesome. He's like, it's too progressive for the Middle East. We can't push it out there. It's too much.
I can see that.
Not saying that wouldn't be a fan base. There would be, but an underground fan base.
Okay, so the old generation Arab, they can't watch the show. I get it. How about the new generation Arab, like yourself and your friends? I mean, I presume you have Arab friends. Are they embracing it?
Yes, I think not just Arabs. I think a lot of first generation immigrant, like, you know, Italians and Greeks and stuff, they could relate to it, because it's all very similar, because their cultures are very similar. It's not just Arabs that, you know, it's any kind of Mediterranean culture or European culture where they put, like, women in this, like, box where she has to be this virgin until she's married. Like, they're all kind of like that. But so our generation is a lot more accepting, and they identify with it more.
Now, you have a confession at one point about bad experiences at a table. Now, how hard was that to write? Because, I mean, you're writing for all those characters. I mean, you have to be pulling this from somewhere. Did you ask your friends about bad experiences, or you just made them up yourself?
I wrote about my bad experiences. I wrote, the one at the table, I wrote, the only one I made up was, Marcus, who's, Jesse, played by Jesse Reynolds, blonde. He was the only one I made up, but mine was real. Blakesley was his story, and Julie's was somebody else's story that I had worked with.
So when you're going to these people, like, did you have to film it once or twice? I mean, you're working on a very limited budget. So your friends really had to come in character, ready to go. Now, how was that as a director?
Right. So, like, I based a lot of the characters kind of on them already. So when I started writing, Blakely was like, he created it with me. So I came up with the idea, and I went to him. I said, I have this, because he and I had worked on an indie web series together. He and I were husband and wife, and we, like, connected as friends. And when I started writing this, I said, I have this idea. I want to share it with you. I have you in mind for this character. And so we started talking about it, and he says, I love this kid. Let's talk about it. And so I got him on board to help me, you know, develop, especially his character, because I can't speak on behalf of gay men, and I can't relate to those experiences. So I needed him to give me those experiences. And so I'd write, and I'd send it back to him, and he'd say, no, let's change this, cause that's not realistic, and go back and forth. And then when for Julie, I based it on her as well. I said, like, I have this in mind, you know, Julie's a martial artist and, in real life. So I based a lot of it on her, just, and what I explained to like Blakely, I said, we're the bones of the character. So, you know, you as a person, you're the bones of the character, but you're not the meat of the character. So your character might react differently than you in real life, but he's based on you. He's based on your experiences.
Now, how long did it take you to film an episode? I mean, have you directed something before, or is this your first real eye behind the scenes?
I had directed two shorts before this. This is my first really big project, and I had assisted on a web series and on a music video before, but this was my first big project. This is my baby. And it took us 12 shooting days to film the whole thing. And we didn't film it in sequence because I was filming, because everyone's volunteering. I had to film based on availability. And so, you know, our first day was that dinner scene where it's very intense and very dramatic. So that was a very heavy day, but everybody was on set, you know, and I had hired this dominatrix who is also a sexual wellness coach. She was my set ethics and intimacy coach. So she was there on set to make sure that everyone felt like they had a safe space, that she was there to help people through any kind of trauma, just to kind of talk through it. To make sure, you know, she's going through breathing exercises, and she talked to everybody individually and said, you know, like, is there anything we want to talk about at first? And she was also there to make sure that because of the content we had on set, you know, the sexual content, that no one was crossing the line in terms of cast or crew, that everyone was professional at all times, and she would be the one to deal with them if someone would have crossed the line.
Now,
and so I felt that was important.
I do have one question. How early in the morning is too early for booze in my coffee?
Oh. So apparently not early enough. Our first day of filming, we ended up drinking wine at like 10 in the morning. And like, I'm like, we should have put grape juice, but we went with wine. We're like, let's just make this realistic and do this. And yeah, it was pretty early. So, I mean, booze in the coffee, like Blakely and I were talking about, never too early.
Fair enough. Now, you have a collection of sex toys, and I mean, I think you only have about 10 that I can see. Now, did you go and purchase them, or did you ask somebody what to buy, or did you know what you were looking for?
Venus Envy, which is a store here in Ottawa, they were so gracious enough. We filmed in their store. They also gave us their demo toys to use.
So you just, how do I approach them? I just walk in and say, hey, I need some toys. This is what I'm doing?
Well, we went in and my partner and I, like my Blakely went in and we talked to them. We said, you know, this is what we're doing. And they were very careful with what it was as well. Because they're like, you know, we have to make sure that you're not giving misinformation, because they're also like an educational facility in terms of workshop and stuff. So they're, you know, we don't want you to be mocking sexuality or like anything like that. I'm like, no, not at all. So they made sure that we were, you know, very inclusive, we were sex positive, and they were very open to it. So
you seem like a very nice roommate in the series. I gotta admit, you let Blakely use your computer. You seem to put up with a lot of his nonsense. How do you think these
two... Sorry, I totally missed that. You cut out there.
Sorry. You seem like a very nice roommate. You let him use a computer. He treats you kind of badly at times. And mm-hmm. How do you think these two characters met? You don't really tell us. It's something I was interested.
And how we met? We never really dived into that. Because I feel like, you know, if I had a second season, I would be able to really develop the characters more in terms of, like, you know, and why he treats her that way. Because... he is a bit of a jerk, in a sense, but there's so much more, you know, there's reason for that. There's just like that inner, I can't really explain, but there's this inner turmoil inside of him that, you know, growing up was really hard for him. And he has that hard time in like letting, like, even though he loves her so much as his best friend, as his roommate, he's still kind of like, he's still kind of petty sometimes. And there's a reason for that.
Okay. Are we going to get a season two? Maybe I'll ask you now.
I'd love to. Honestly, I've been working on it. I'm trying my best. You know, it was very hard to self-fund it. You know, and I carried the production on my back. I'm working on it. I definitely want to, you know, in the second season, originally this was supposed to be a comedy. And as I kept writing and writing, I kind of got more dramatic. And then, you know, funny again, a dramedy, but I think the second season would be a bit darker, a bit sexier, but definitely have more development of character. So I definitely would love to have a second season, and I'm working on it.
Okay. Since you've gone sexier, I do have a sexier question anyway. You do promote male nudity throughout the thing, which I did notice, which I have no issues with, but there is no female nudity.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because I wanted to switch the, you know, it's always about female nudity. This time around, I was like, we're going to go with male nudity. And originally it was just going to be, one person, you know, in the fourth episode in the opening. But then, you know, Blakely was like, hey, can I get naked? I was like, sure, let's do it. He was feeling confident that day. I was like, okay, let's go for it. And so, I wanted to kind of turn the tables a little bit.
Which is totally fine with me. I like to ask. Now, I want to discuss your opening of the show. I think you definitely had a look you were going for. Mm-hmm. A very gothic, maybe even horror look without the horror.
Yeah.
Was that the plan? Like, were you watching old bodice rippers? Like, it's definitely filmed that way.
You know, I let one of my actors and my photographer, he did all of my promo and stuff, and he's he was a cinematographer for me in one of my other films. He wasn't available to help us for that, but he said, you know, I'm gonna do the intro for you. So he has a specific style, and so one of my actors like, can I do this? And I said, okay, let's talk about it. And he said, this is what I'm thinking, book the studio again, we're gonna do this something. We're going to go kink. We're going to go sexy. And as they were shopping for a couple of things, him and the cinematographer, they found the masks and they're like, okay, let's try this out. And so, yeah, that's what we,
let's discuss the mask. I think that's a great idea to add in the promo. I think it adds a lot.
Yeah.
I really think it adds that adult theme you're looking for. I don't know if that's what you were looking for at that point, but I definitely felt the golden mask worked that way. And I also want to bring in the music here, because I think the music is so important there to achieve of what you're going for.
I'm so glad. Did you like the music?
I did.
Okay, good. So I had a composer do all that. And originally we had found a song on, before I even got the composer on board, I found a song on YouTube that I really liked that we kind of like edited to the video to that, the opening to it. But then I got a composer on board and he said, well, I know you got the song on YouTube and you're allowed to use it, but like, let's get you something that's for you. Let's make you something that's for Dirty Love. And he really, we worked back and forth with it. And I thought he did a fantastic job. And he really, I think it just became our theme music. And I really loved it. And the masks, I think, represent so many things because it has the adult theme, but it also represents the different faces that people, you know, people show their face in one way, but deep down there's somebody else, you know? So I really find that that's what it is. Like that really represents that. It can mean so many different things.
Now, you also have a spanking scene. I think I'm okay saying that without ruining much. How was that to shoot?
So, you know, it's so funny because you guys only get such a small portion of it. And I think I might release the whole workshop because she actually, so Jamie, who is the dominatrix who I had on set, she did the workshop. We filmed 20 minutes of it and we went through a whole workshop with her and they were like, we can't show, like, this is too long, so we'll have to cut it down, but I might release it just to show what her workshop is and what she teaches, because she teaches these workshops on a regular basis. That's her job. And it was really interesting because none of us had ever gone through a spanking workshop before, and we thought that was a lot of fun to do and just to experience that, and just to be, you know, part of the whole atmosphere of the series.
Okay, I want to discuss a few more lines here. Women can't tell guys how many men they've slept with, but 30 men in the gay world is nothing. Is, I got to say, my favorite line in the series.
Hymen barely been touched.
Yes.
Yeah.
But is that true, though? I mean, I don't know. I've never thought of it that way, because I don't really analyze
people.
Yes,
in my experience, that's... Yeah, and it's so funny because, and maybe this is like an Ottawa thing, but like, because I had spoken to someone from Toronto about it, and she's like, no, it's weird because, you know, in my 20s, I was in Montreal, my late teens and early 20s going to school, and Montreal is very sexual and it's very open, but, you know, guys here in Ottawa, like my experience is like, you don't tell them how many guys you sleep with because it gives you a bad reputation, and I think it's quite ridiculous, so I always stuck to the number of four.
I don't know. I've never asked anybody that question. I always think it's a weird, none of my business.
I got that question a lot, like in my early 20s, actually.
I will trust you on that. I will promise you. I've never asked anybody. No. When your web series was first released, did you release it episode by episode, or did you dump the whole thing off at once? It looked like it was every month, I think.
It was every Tuesday. Every Tuesday every week we released an episode.
Did you have anybody come after you or anything saying, this is terrible, I can't believe you're doing this, or was everything a positive message for you?
A lot of it was very positive. Actually, like, we got a big kink following from the Ottawa community. And, you know, have you ever been to Ottawa? You know, Ottawa is a very government city.
I do know Ottawa.
But Ottawa has a very, very sexy underground kink community, and it's huge. And I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, hey, for your second season, can you talk about polyamory? Because apparently it's so big. And, you know, polyamorous relationships, I'm in this polyamorous relationship. And I've had multiple people tell me that. I've had people reach out saying, hey, like, I'm from the LGBT community and the kink community. I love your show. I think this is fantastic. I love, you know, what you're doing. And I think people just finally see themselves represented. You know, I've had people say, you know, it's not for everybody. It's not for me. And I was like, this is cool. I know that it's not for everybody. And I knew putting it out there that it's not for everybody. And I get that. But I was just kind of wanting to put my truth out there, my friend's truth out there. And like my group of friends are these people, and that this is not to say like we don't live together. We're not, you know, but you know, Blakely's one of my good friends, and he's married to a man in real life. And, you know, Julie's one of my best friends, and Jesse as well. Like, so this is what I live every day. And I want to put that out there, that this is the norm, like the diversity. And this is Canada now.
I agree. One of the diversity things I forgot to touch on earlier, our place is really dying to have more vegan options.
Yeah, actually, like, people are really into it now. And especially, and Blakely's a huge vegan, so yeah.
Okay, so that's where that comes from. So
yeah.
Let's back up a bit. Let's go over the casting a bit, because I think that's very important to the series, each character. Obviously, you casted yourself because you need to do something different besides playing a terrorist wife. I got that. Now, how did you decide, Blakely we need, because we need a gay character, which is great, because we need some difference. I get that. Now, Blakely's buddy is the blonde hair guy.
Yeah, Marcus, yeah. Yeah,
Marcus. And then we have your friend who shows up occasionally.
Yes.
So how do we decide?
Sorry?
So how did we decide on them? I understand why Blakely's here. How did the other two come in, Matt and Julie?
Well, Blakely, I really, you know, I had him in mind from the moment I started writing. And the way I start writing, I had a scene in my head and I had to write it out. And that's how I started between roommates. And I really think, you know, Blakely's not, he's not an effeminate gay. And I really found that important, because I find that a lot of gays on TV are the stereotypical, and there are some, like Marcus, that's him in real life. Like that's, and I didn't even write him based on Jesse, who plays him. I just had a couple characters in my head that I really love from TV. And I was like, I kind of have like a little mix of them too. And Jesse is that person in real life. So it, you know, worked out. So it's not to say that there aren't gays like that. There are, but you know, there are also, you know, gays like Blakely who are very, you know, masculine. And I think we need to showcase the wide range of LGBT characters out there, because I think, you know, we need to kind of break stereotypes, and especially in the show. And so, but I always had Blakely in mind, because he and I had worked together on another web series, and I was like, let's do this, you know, and that's how it started. And I started writing with him and I in mind. And then, you know, Julie is one of my best friends, and she's also an actor as well. And I was like, you know, I'm going to write you a character. And then I just started writing. Like, I have this like kick-ass character in my head. Like, I'm going to write it out for you. And then I had this other character for Marcus, but I didn't have Jesse in mind for it yet, because I kind of knew him. He was a radio show host here for 3 years. He was on our agency's roster, but I didn't know him yet. That well until we did a showcase where I was singing with my brother, who's a rapper here, and he was hosting, and we were talking about my first short film, which was called Russian Gangster, about this Romanian actor who wants to be a Hollywood star, but he had such a hard time because he has an accent. And I wrote it based on my friend who's Romanian, who's been trying to, you know, get roles, but he had a hard time. And, you know, and Jesse was like, yeah, it's kind of like trying to get rid of the gay out of your voice. It's like an accent. You have a hard time. And I said, oh my God, I have a role for you. If you would be willing to like be in a web series. And he said, yeah, I want to get back into acting, you know, let's do, you know, so let me read it. And so that's how he got on board for Marcus. And then I had auditions for, the person who comes in once in a while, and for Sai, who's the waiter, he was supposed to be Christian, but I couldn't find anybody to play that role well. But I had this actor that I'd met once or twice before, and he said, I really want to audition for you, like for this role, but I'm traveling, but like I'm gonna come and do this. And he like can't pick me up at work, and he at my lunch hour, and he's like, I'm gonna audition for you in my car. And like we filmed it, and he auditioned, and I said, well, I can't have an Indian guy named Christian, so let's change the name up. And so we changed the name up to Sai to reflect him a bit more. And that's how the casting kind of came about.
Okay, so your web series done. You're not playing a terrorist wife. You're not playing an immigrant. You're playing a very, I'm trying to think of the word, progressive Arab woman. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has that helped you at all?
Has the series helped me?
Yes.
I think it's helped me personally in terms of standing my ground a bit more, in terms of not doing auditions that are like terrorists and refugees, you know. And I went to TIFF recently and in September, and there was this conference about diversity casting, and there was an Afghani actor. She was incredible. She's started the movement for Middle Eastern, North African, South Asian actors, so like Minasa or Mina characters. And she was saying that, you know, when she started acting, it was right after 9/11, and she's just like this beautiful, beautiful woman. And, you know, she'd go in for the same roles, and the people would be like, I'm sorry, you're here for what? And she's like, I'm here for this role. Like, I'm Afghani. And they're like, I'm sorry, do they all look like you? She's like, what am I supposed to look like? What do you think we look like? You know? And so she's like, that's it. And so she didn't really fit a box. She's like, well, I'm not really Caucasian and I'm not Asian, but they're like, well, you have to check off the Caucasian box, but when you can't really come in for Caucasian roles. And so she's like, no, that's not going to work. So she has been fighting in Hollywood for this. And so, you know, when I watched this, I was bawling like in the audience, and I went to like talk to her after. She gave me a hug. I was like, you know, everything you said really reflected what I had literally just told the producer outside of why I did Dirty Love, like literally almost word for word. And I said, it's really hard. Like, you know, when my agent can't submit me for many white roles, like I can get away with some, but you know, when you put me like, when Ottawa is all movies of the week and they're really whitewashed, it's hard to put me next to like a really white person, you can tell, but I'm not diverse enough, or I don't fit their, you know, Asian box or their black box, or, you know, like I don't fit that one that they need to check off to have. So it was kind of hard, but it's given me more momentum to just create my own, even though, you know, it's expensive to fund out of, you know, pocket. I'd rather be doing this than not acting at all or not creating at all.
Fair enough. Now, you're an independent filmmaker. Locations are the hardest thing for you at times, besides feeding people, which we will get to at the end. You have a nice, beautiful bar location. How'd you steal that one?
I'm so sorry, you cut out there.
Now, your bar location, you have a beautiful bar location where you're having brunch.
Oh, yeah. We were so lucky. We just, we had gone to this restaurant at first to see if they would let us film, because they're like, oh, yeah, like they do drag shows there all the time. And, you know, the owner was like, yeah, no problem. Go talk to my manager. Like, okay, great. We went in, and like this manager wanted like nothing to do with us. And I was like, no, but your owner said that we can like film here. And he was like, we basically were wasting his time. Like, he didn't even want to come talk to us. And, he was making it really difficult to like have a conversation with him. I was like, what? And he wouldn't even look at me. He would look at Blakely and talk to him when I was asking all the questions, you know? And I was like, wow, that's so disrespectful. So I was like, yeah, this is not happening. So then we started walking down the street, and then he's like, you know, there's Pub 101. You want to go check that out? So I was like, you know what? Let's go try it out. Let's go see. We talked to the manager, and he's like, you know, here's the card of the owner. Talk to her, see what she says. And when I emailed her, she's like, I don't see why we can't help you out before opening. And that was it. So, and I, you know, I bought lunch for everybody there. And so, you know, I still spent money in their establishment, you know, as a, you know, respect for them opening the doors at 8 o'clock in the morning before their bar opened, and letting us tape all their windows, you know, shut and like with garbage bags. And so they were really great.
You do have a scene in a parking lot. I presume that was a non-permit thing. But we're not allowed to discuss that. I'll just let that go over quickly. Now, the last thing I want to discuss before moving on, besides feeding your crew, which I think was probably your biggest expense, what have you learned after doing a web series?
You really need a good team, you know, and I had a really good team, but it was hard because everyone was on a volunteer basis. So if something paid came up, they were like out. And so, and also everybody, you know, like in terms of sound and music, they all had full-time jobs. So they were doing other things. So, you know, they would only be able to help me, when their time permitted. But really, be organized as much as possible. And I was organized because, you know, I was an EA for a long time. Like I was an assistant, like, so being organized and scheduling, that's my thing. And so I was really organized, but like to be even more organized on top of that and having, someone like a production assistant who's going to be your right hand man. So like, I don't have to, cause you know, as I'm acting, I'm still kind of directing. Like I had assistant directors there to direct as I'm acting, in the scenes that I'm in, but I'm still directing them to direct me and direct them and how I wanted that, you know, so it's, my head was always in production. So to have someone there, you know, definitely, but, to not take so much on and to really rely on the team as well that, you know, cause I took a lot on in terms of production. And so I needed to like pump it out. And I think I put out in a timeline saying, okay, we're going to have the series out by here. You know, you can expect it at this time. And then I was like, wow, I can't meet my deadline. So I think putting out a deadline, was what put a lot of pressure on me. But, you know, having a great, you know, crew, people behind you, people believe in the work. And I think if you, are organized and you respect everybody, I think, you know, you can have a great team. And I think, you know, that's what really, I really learned a lot about that, but also, you know, just investing in yourself, because if you don't invest in yourself, no one else is going to invest in you.
Very true. Okay. Now it's time for some fun questions. Okay. Easy one. Cause you're the first time here. I ask everybody this question, your favorite film.
Ah, this is so hard.
You can have more than one. It's allowed.
I know. I'm like, cheeseball, and I like the Pitch Perfect movies because I don't know, those are, I love comedy. What's my favorite movie? I think like The Shawshank Redemption is one of them. I studied that in school. I thought that was a really great film. Brick, that's a film by Ryan Johnson. Fantastic before he was like star. I love film noirs, and I don't know, I like when I was in school, like way back when, I discovered that, and I loved that. So that's one of my favorite movies as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's an Ottawa question for you. Stacey's Donuts or Maverick Donuts?
What was it? What was the first one?
Stacey's Donuts or Maverick Donuts? Which one's better?
I don't even know what Stacey's are, but I love Maverick Donuts.
Oh my God.
Where's Stacey's Donuts?
I don't, we'll talk off air and I'll tell you where it is.
Okay.
I've been to Ottawa and I've had both, so I have my own opinion. One film you've never seen and should have.
One film I haven't seen and should have. Probably The Godfather. Please don't hurt me.
Okay. Well, everybody, just so you know, you can help me out. Give them your web series. Tell them exactly where to find it.
You can find Dirty Love on YouTube, and it's youtube.com/C/ Dirty Love Series. And you have to put the series at the end or you'll mistake it for the Dirty Love movie that's from India. So Dirty Love Series, or you can find it at dirtyloveseries.com. All the episodes are on there as well. And we're on Instagram at Dirty Love Series, and on Facebook, Dirty Love Series, and on Twitter at Dirty Love Series. So it's all there.
Thank you for your time. Have a great night.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.